This is episode number 386 with the legendary singer Meatloaf. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Welcome everyone to a special edition of the School of Greatness podcast. What an interview we have today. The legend is in the house, Meatloaf himself. He likes to be called Meat. I am super pumped that I got a chance to connect with Meatloaf, and the stories he shares are just so incredible. What a performer, what a storyteller, and an incredible talent and human being. So kind, so giving, so loving, a great leader in all sense of the word, and so creative. I really enjoyed this interview, and I hope you do as well, and hope you find it fascinating. Make sure to check out all the show notes at lewishowes.com/386. Watch the full video interview over on YouTube as well. That's YouTube/Lewis Howes. And let me know what you think of this. Share it with your friends. I think they're all going to dig it. So go ahead and tweet it out right now or post it on Facebook, lewishowes.com/38. Now, Meatloaf is a multi-platinum musician made famous for his rock opera, Bat Out of Hell, which is currently the fifth highest selling album of all time. Pretty incredible. He's also acted in cult hit films like Rocky Horror Picture Show and Fight Club, one of my favorite movies. And his new album just came out, Braver Than We Are. So make sure to pick up the new album and check it out. Some of the things we talk about in this interview are how playing sports can have a big role in anyone's career. And actually, Meatloaf says that without sports, he wouldn't be where he is today, wouldn't even be near as successful as he is today as a musician or an artist. Also, why Meatloaf got into improv acting after he was successful in music, why he never asked the songwriter what the song is about, and his secret to success in becoming a great singer. What advice Meatloaf disagrees with that TV show hosts give to singers, and what it was like to act with Brad Pitt on Fight Club. We cover this and so much more in this episode. Make sure, again, to share it with your friends, lewishowes.com/386. And without further ado, let me introduce to you the legendary Meatloaf.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these. But did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12-pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness podcast. We have a legend in the house, Meatloaf, who's asking to go by Meat. Good to see you, sir.
Okay.
Good to see you.
I just have to explain one thing to you.
Yes.
I never allow people in advertisement of a record or tour or anything, use the word legend, star, or superstar.
Okay.
Because I don't think of myself as that.
Mm.
I think of myself as the same as we're looking out a window, and I'm assuming somewhere down there there's a guy working on a telephone pole.
Yeah.
And I'm just like that guy, only I have a different job.
You both work hard.
Yeah.
Both have a specific talent.
That's right.
But yours seems to look more people want to listen to your talent than
I don't know about that. When the phone goes out, they're going to get upset.
That's true. A lot of people want to get on that phone. That's true.
Well, you have... When your cell phone goes out and that tower goes down, you want to know why.
That's true.
That guy's important.
Well, for me, you've created some incredible music over the years, and you've been a big part of my life growing up, and your work in movies and Broadway, it's really been inspiring to watch your career. So
yeah. I've done a lot of things.
You have.
I have been on Broadway. I've done Shakespeare in the Park. I've done off-Broadway. I wanted to know what stand-up comedy was like. Mm. So I did, the first night I did stand-up comedy out in front of a very famous old comedian named Henny Youngman.
Uh-huh.
In the Westport Playhouse. And I went to the guy that owned the club. Yeah. He knew who I was. And he said, well, have you ever done stand-up before? And I said, no, but I want to know what it's like. And so he said, okay, I'll give you 4 minutes. I said, fine. So I didn't have anything prepared. I went up strictly improv. And it was the whole was about me meeting Elvis at the Rocky Horror Show. And I had people in hysterical. And... Because I'm a closet comedian.
Sure.
And so, and Henny Youngman actually walked out of his dressing room and was standing there when I came off.
Wow.
Now, people who don't know who Henny Youngman is famous for saying, take my wife, please. Mm. So the next night he said, will you do this again? I said, yeah. He said, I'll give you 8 minutes. So
said,
I,
okay.
I had eight. Listen, I could have gone on for 30 minutes.
Really? Improv?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I did a lot of improv. When National Lampoon Show was going, they said to Belushi, you have to have an understudy. Who can possibly understudy you? He said, there's only one guy in this town who can understudy me, and that's Meatloaf. And so I went on a couple of times, and I worked with Gilda, and I worked with Billy Murray. And
right, wow.
And so, I mean, but the king of improv was really Richard Belzer from Law & Order SUV. He was my opening act when we first went out with Bat Out of Hell for about, a good 3 months. Mm. And he is the king of improv.
Really?
I've never seen anybody better than Richard Belzer.
More impressive than all the guys who do Whose Line Is It Anyways, more than Saturday Night Live guys, just...
Oh, yeah, and I know all those guys.
Right. Who's the second most impressive?
I don't know, one of those guys on Who's My Line, but I can't remember his name.
Wayne or what's...
Not Wayne, the tall guy.
Bald guy, tall, bald guy?
He used to be on the... The sitcom, not the bald guy.
The bald guy.
I think he's redheaded. I'm okay. Colorblind.
Sure. Yeah. They're all funny to me. So
yeah.
They're all incredible.
Yeah, Wayne's great.
Yeah, that's a cool. What got you into music and acting in the first place? Why were you inspired as growing up that way?
I wanted to get out of study hall as a sophomore in high school.
You and me both. That's why I did sports, though.
I said, I can't sit in this room.
Oh, my gosh.
I have to be quiet.
That's the worst.
And I'll give you a clue why. We were supposed to open all the casinos are building arenas now. Mm. And so I think there was a 9,000-seat or 10,000-seat arena being built on a reservation in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And we were supposed to be the first act to play there. Well, about 3 days before, they came to me and said, the arena's not finished, and they want to put up a tent. I said, I don't care. If the people come, that's all I care about.
Sure.
And so the head of the council, they don't call them chiefs anymore, the head of the tribal council wanted to meet me. And so he came in, and all I did was ask him questions. How do you decide this? Does everybody participate in the profits of the casino? Mm-hmm. How do you decide this? You know, I just kept asking him everything about, I wanted to know how they worked. And he stopped me and he goes, do you mind if I give you your own name for our tribe? And I went, oh my God, I'd be honored. Are you kidding? He goes, okay, in this tribe, from now on, you're known as Never Shuts Up.
That's hilarious.
And I just cracked up. So I tell the story all the time because I thought it was the funniest thing
ever. You thought it'd be like Walking Warrior or something cool, right? Yeah. Eagle Eye.
No, I really like, I think Never Shuts Up fits me perfect.
That's amazing. Okay, so what was your first, I guess, moment or experience of either a song or music or a show that you saw that you said, wow, that's really cool. It'd be fun to experience something like that. I know the study hall was...
And never had that. I just have always wanted to try everything.
Yeah.
So I hosted game shows.
Really?
For VH1.
Wow.
For DirecTV. I've done stand-up comedy more than once. Well, twice there, then three other times in different clubs around New York. And I decided, this is too hard. No, there wasn't. I don't remember any one thing.
Yeah, you're just curious about all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Just I really liked being in the drama class in sophomore. And I really wanted to learn that craft.
In high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then I tried out for the musical. My sophomore year, they gave me a small part. Junior year, they gave me a small part. Senior year, I had one of the leads.
Wow.
And I got voted in my senior year as one of the top 10 actors, high school actors in Dallas. And so they let us be walk-on soldiers in the opera Carmen.
Wow.
Which was playing, which was opening downtown. And we were soldiers. We walked on going, oh, that's all we did. But the world of opera is very interesting.
Do you like opera? Do you like singing opera?
Well, I'm a Heldon tenor. That I had to learn how to sing rock and roll. I had to learn, literally teach myself how to sing the songs on Battle in the Hell. And if you were to listen to the new record, the first verse of a song called Going All the Way is just a start, and you listen to the first verse of Battle in the Hell, it's sung in exactly the same voice. It's just, I'm 40 years older. So the timbre is a little bit different. But if you really, if people really took the time to listen and not just automatically judge because, oh, and see, if they really took the time, they would go, oh, he's right. That is exactly the same voice. It's just that the tone is different.
Yeah.
And the reason is because my natural singing voice is operatic.
Yes.
And I'm a Heldon tenor. And in fact, I was doing Shakespeare in the Park in 72 for Joe Papp. And I had an offer from opera patrons. They would pay me $60,000 a year. Now, you got to figure, 1972.
That's great money.
$60,000 a year for 5 years to study with Pavarotti's coach and make my debut at the Met.
That's huge, right? That's like the dream, isn't it?
Well, it was confusing.
Oh.
Because the most money I'd ever made before was $7,500 in a year.
So $60K is a lot of money.
Yeah. And so, but just like everything that I've ever done, whether it be whatever it is, I have to research it. That's just who I've been, even as a kid. When I was 5 years old, before I would buy a toy, like there was different army men you know, you could buy.
Sure, of course.
I would research to see who made the best ones.
Yeah.
And my mom would go, did you find out yet? I went, yeah, I want those. And I would research. I've always been, that's who I've been. Mm-hmm. And so I did the research. And unless you were Pavarotti or Placido Domingo or Beverly Sills, I can't remember who the major stars were in opera in 72.
Right.
But unless you were a major, major star in opera, the conductor controlled everything. He controlled your phrasing. He controlled the tempo. He controlled everything. And I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I'd be in prison for murder. Because I would have killed him.
Sure.
And because I'm rebellious.
You're right.
And I don't like when anybody tells me how to sing anything. You can't tell me that. Because I've done so much research mm-hmm. on the song. And on this record, it starts with a song called Who Needs the Young. And it was written by Jim Steinman when he was 19 years old.
Wow.
And it was the first song we recorded, and then we went and did shows. And I have never, ever, and I've sung a lot of Jim Steinman songs, never asked Jimmy why he's written a song. What is it about?
Why don't you ask him?
I don't want to know. I'm really not interested. It's like when I do a film, I don't want the writer to come up to me and tell me why he wrote the character. I want to discover the character myself. Because the character, if he tells me why he wrote him, that's going to influence my decisions on who I think the character is.
That's so funny.
So I've never asked Jimmy, and he knows that every song that I've ever sung of his has been in a character. And it comes from acting. So people go, are you an actor or a singer? I go, I'm an actor. And I take acting into every phase of what I do. It's like doing stand-up. It's improv. That's acting. So I decided to take the first song, because Jimmy wrote it when he was 19. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ask him why. All I knew is that the kid was really angry. Whoever he could have written about an old man, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I decided that I would make my character 19 years old and very angry. I know what he was angry at, but I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
Because I've always said, everybody, if they buy the album, should take a piece of white tape, put it across my name, write your own name on the album. Because the album is then yours. Mm-hmm. It becomes your stories. It becomes what you think it is. I don't want to tell you what I sing about. I'm not going to tell you what Jimmy wrote about, because I don't know. And the album belongs to the listener. And it's like, there were mostly, this is the first album that we have ever gotten good reviews for.
Hmm.
I was in a state of shock. I mean, we got good reviews from Rolling Stone, Entertainment Weekly, Q Magazine, Kerrang. I mean, we've never gotten 4 and 5 stars. We got 5 stars from 3 or 4 places in Germany. We've never gotten 5 stars. We've never gotten 4 stars.
Right.
I think the highest we ever got was 3 from somebody once. But they seem to have gotten it.
Yeah, make sure you guys go get this. Braver Than We Are, but put White Out over the name and put your name on it.
And also, I've got a doctor's prescription for it.
You do?
Yeah, which is, if you buy it, a lot of people love it on the first listen. A lot of people hate it on the first listen. My prescription is this. Buy it, listen to it 4 times in one day. By the 4th time,
uh-huh.
you'll get it.
There you go.
You'll see where the magic is. And the other thing, it's not a musical, folks.
Okay.
Not anything like a musical. And Train of Love, which when you listen to it, you would think, oh, it's a guy singing about a girl. It's not. It's a 19-year-old trying to find out who he is. He is confused.
I think every 19-year-old feels that way, probably, right? Everyone.
Well, a lot of, most of them.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know, I'm in a crossroad. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go back? Do I go forward? Where I've been at hundreds of crossroads. I've never even looked right or left or behind. I just go forward. And that would be my advice to anybody. You come to a crossroad, don't look left, don't look right, don't look backwards. You go forward. I've had people come to me when they're at crossroads and ask me, what do you think? And I go, do this because it's moving you forward.
Mm. Like that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'm curious about your sound. You have a very unique sound. Was there a moment where you were like, okay, this is my sound, in your 20s, your 30s, like this Meatloaf has arrived, this is the sound?
Or... No, I change sounds constantly. It's like I'm not Robin Zander, I'm not Dave Grohl, I'm not Freddie, who is the best rock singer ever to live. Other than male. Joplin was, period.
Yeah.
But male, it's Freddie. Joplin was in a different ballpark. She was like, they have the All-Star game every year. She was in the All-Star game every day. So I have so many different tones and qualities. Hushed voices, big voices, little voices. And Jimmy, on this record, And it's one of the things that freaked people out. They were expecting me to come in with this bombastic, you know, loud, high voice. Jimmy said, no, because I went up the octave on a song called Going All the Way Is Just a Start. And Jimmy goes, no, no, stay in your low voice. Your low voice is remarkable.
Yeah.
And I've had a few critics call it wobbly. Not wobbly, people. It's called vibrato.
Yes. Wow. I grew up in a musically talented family. My parents were opera majors at Ohio State. My brother is a jazz violinist. He played with Les Paul for 10 years at the Iridium in New York City. He played at his funeral. So I've kind of grown up admiring many genres of music and being able to appreciate it.
You would make a better
reviewer, yes.
Reviewer than that guy that went.
Exactly.
Sounds like a circus.
Exactly.
I'm going, come on, man. If you're going to review music, at least learn about it.
Sure. I'm curious, who was your most influential person in your life growing up?
Well, growing up, it would have probably been Big Daddy Lipscomb from the Baltimore Colts.
Okay.
Or Ray Nitschke or Fuzzy Thurton for the Packers.
Okay.
Or, but I would say Big Daddy Lipscomb, who played defensive tackle for the Baltimore Colts.
Why was he the most influential?
Because when I was a kid, I wanted to play professional football.
Mm.
And, because I was so much bigger than everybody else until my junior in high school. And then everybody caught up. And I was no longer the biggest one. I couldn't push people around like I could before.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to become the meanest guy on the field.
Wow.
So I went into acting mode.
Uh-huh.
And I developed this character that played football that was absolutely as mean as you could possibly be.
What position were you?
Oh, God, the head coach.
He played all over the place?
He thought he was a college coach. He ran a defense based on LSU out of the 60s called the Chinese Bandits.
Okay.
Which was the most ridiculous defense to try to put into a high school. I played middle linebacker, nose guard, tackle, defensive end. When I went out to defensive end, that outside linebacker would rush, I would cover the flat.
Uh-huh.
Now, I wasn't fast forward, but laterally, I was as fast as anyone on the team.
Mm.
So I could cover the flat like nobody's business.
Right, right.
Anybody come out to the flat, that halfback come out to the flat, forget it. You ain't catching the ball. And if you do, you ain't gaining any yards, dude.
There you go.
So, I mean, when we were playing in practice, they didn't blow the whistle. I kept hitting.
Of course.
Oh, I got yelled at. I had to run laps. I go, well, blow your whistle if you want me to stop.
I know. Otherwise, get the play still on.
Yeah.
Play to the whistle. That's what they teach you.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
When you blow the whistle, I stop. Mm. Until you blow the whistle, I'm not stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sometimes run first team offense against first team defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time hitting the starting quarterback. I mean, I nailed him.
Oh,
I think I had to run about 10 miles for that one.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
And
what do you think sports played a big role in your career?
I know it did. In the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you play sports, you have to be very disciplined.
Yes.
And when you're an actor, you should be very disciplined. And I was in the car. I just left Rich Eisen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was explaining I went to dinner with an actor named Charles Sterling. And he said, if you want to really freak a cast out, go into a table reading of the movie without the script.
Oh, that is.
And if they ask you, do you want a script? You go, no, I don't need one.
That is scary.
So they read the whole script. And when you don't know everybody's lines, but you know when your scene's coming. So when they start that scene, you're ready. But you sit there, and he says, I got news for you. Every actor is going to freak out. And so when it comes time to do your scene, mm-hmm. whatever actor you're working with is going to come to the set, and he's going to know his lines.
Mm. Yeah, he is.
And they know you're dead serious. Mm. So that comes back to discipline. And it wasn't until Charles Durning told me that, and he told me that in like 97 maybe. Mm-hmm. So
did you do that in a reading one time? Or?
Oh, he did in every reading.
Did you do this ever?
Oh, I've done it in every reading really? I've ever done since he told me that.
You show up, and then you're the only one without the script, and everyone else has a script.
Yeah.
But they're coming prepared to set, is what you're saying.
Oh, when they come to set, they
wow.
know. And
that would be so intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this person just memorized everything? And,
that's the point.
Yeah, wow.
I haven't memorized everything, but I've memorized
your parts.
And I know what the other guy's going to say.
That's impressive. That's a skill right there.
So that that's discipline.
Yeah, you learned that from football and other sports.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the other thing that drives me crazy on a set is when you're doing a scene with a character, and I was doing a scene in a movie called Hole in One, mm-hmm. and I'm doing it with a guy you see a lot on TV. He does a lot of guest starring roles. Not big roles, but, you know, pretty good roles. And we're going to do this scene, and he goes, well, my characters wouldn't say this. Mm. And I said, hang on for a second. Before you got here, did you read the script? And he goes, yeah. I said, okay, in the script, does your character say that? And he goes, yeah. I said, so let's analyze this for a second. My character says this, and it's written in the script. I'm going to say this. If you change that, what your character says, you're going to look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, okay.
Have you ever changed anything or gone ad lib or improvish?
Well, only without if I'm in a movie where there is improv going on.
They say, go ahead, you know, you can extend
yeah,
the line.
Yeah, if you're doing that kind of thing. If you're sure. doing a movie with Will Ferrell
right.
or some of those guys, and back when Chris Farley was alive or Belushi or any of that, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of improv in a there's more improv in a comedy than there is in a drama.
Right.
But Richard Belzer being the best improv guy, if you were watching Law and Order SUV, I knew every time he threw in an improv.
Really? Because it just didn't feel right? Or
no, it felt perfect.
Okay.
But you could sense from the other actor.
Oh, wait.
it just like twisted him. But Belzer was very smart. He usually waited if he had the last line in the scene mm-hmm. so that the other actor wasn't for, he didn't force the other actor into doing something that wasn't.
Or to be thrown off and say, well, what am I supposed
yeah.
to am I supposed
because
to,
yeah. that's called forcing.
Yes, gotcha.
And
wow.
you don't ever force anything in a film.
Do you feel like without your sports experience that you would have been as disciplined or as successful in your career as a
Not
musician?
A prayer.
Really?
Not a prayer.
I'm so glad you say that because I feel like as an athlete, I played professional football and I played basketball and decathlon. And I feel like that's what's catapulted me into my entrepreneurial career and everything else was
yeah,
the hard
playing,
work.
Yeah, who's playing pro football?
I played arena football in Alabama.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
which is have you ever seen arena football?
It's like, yeah, yeah.
It's a whole other game. It's intense. And,
oh, it's really intense.
I broke my wrist in the first season and diving into a wall, and it was just a...
Yeah, you got walls.
But
it's
I feel
in a hockey ring.
Exactly. But the coaching that I would have throughout my entire childhood as an athlete, I felt really instilled the principles of how to be successful or how to achieve any vision in any part of life.
Well, I'll give you a real surprise.
Sure.
sophomore in high school, I was in drama class.
Yeah.
I got hit in the head with a shot put at 62 feet.
Wow.
The guy who hit me was that year the state champ. Mm. And he was a sophomore as well. He was state champ 3 years in a row. I don't know what happened to him because he never said he was sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
So I just ignored him.
That's a heavy ball in the head.
A 12-pound shot.
60 feet coming down.
Oh, I've got a dent in my skull.
Oh, my gosh. From
you
the shot.
Feel it. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Holy cow. Wow. That's crazy.
But it didn't knock me out.
Huh.
And they could hear it on the junior high baseball field, which was about 300 yards away.
Wow.
Said it sounded like somebody broke a bat.
No way.
And so the coaches came and said, are you okay? I went, yeah, I'm fine. They said, can you walk? I said, sure. I get up. They let go of me, and I fall face forward. Because what it had done, hit me on the right side, it had paralyzed.
No way.
My right arm and my right leg. Left side.
Right.
It had paralyzed the left side. And I fell on a wooden stake that marked 60 feet with my nose. Oh, and when they picked me back up again, the blood didn't come out of my nose. It ran down in my stomach.
Oh, my gosh.
So when we're going in the ambulance on the way, I throw up all this blood. And the ambulance guy freaking out. I've never seen my mother freak out. My mother was always calm. It's like in a crisis, in a major crisis, I go really calm. And I've been in planes where landing gears didn't come down. Everybody's freaking out, calling their ex-wives, telling everybody this. I'm going, stop it. It's the front landing gear. Best, most going to happen to you, you're going to break your arm, your leg. No big deal. You're not dying.
Right.
I always go up to the pilot, because it's usually in private planes.
Yes.
I go up to the pilot, I go,
wow.
You know what you're doing here? And they go, yeah. I said, okay, tell me. And they go, okay, I'm just going to make sure. Because I was in a plane, woman was a pilot, she was freaking out. The co-pilot was going through the handbook like this. I'm going, what are you doing?
Right.
I said, have you tried to crank it down? And he went, oh, right. I'm going, oh, my God. It's like that guy who wrote It's a Circus Song.
Sure.
So
you're doing your research, essentially.
Yeah, I know
about
planes.
You're asking questions. You're researching it.
Yeah, so I go, so we're both trying to crank it down. And we're going by the tower, and we're asking him, the pilot's asking him, is it down? They said, we can see it, but it's not down. So we're coming from Amsterdam. We have to circle in the airport about 2 hours. Mm. And about 50 feet before we hit the ground, it popped down.
Whoa.
Oh, I was ready.
Sure.
I had the pilot ready. Keep that nose up as long as you can.
Yes.
And these guys at this airport outside of London had foamed the runway, put up a net to catch us.
You're fine. You're going to, yeah.
I said, we're fine.
Bump on the head or something. Or,
yeah. Bump your head, get a cut, no big deal.
Right.
You're not dying, dude. Don't worry about it.
Well, what makes you so calm in all these situations?
Don't know. But whenever there's a major crisis, I just suddenly become like still water. And I can, okay, just relax. You're okay. Okay. Mm. It's like on stage, if something, you know, if the PA goes out, if something starts to happen, I just go really calm. And I go up and deal with the audience. And I'm really loud.
Right.
And so I can yell at them. I can yell.
Sure.
Even if it's an arena, they can hear me.
Right.
And if they can't, I'll go find something to make a megaphone out of.
Wow.
And
so you just have that instinct that you've got it handled, you've got it under control.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like one of your parents maybe instilled that into you, or what was the...
It's probably my mother.
Yeah, yeah. She was that way.
Yeah. I don't remember my mother very well. She died when she was young. when I was young.
Yeah.
They both died when they were 50. My mother was older than my father, but they both died at 54.
Mm. How old were you when your father passed?
21.
Okay. Wow.
And it was 4 years before that, so I was 17, I guess, when mother died.
Wow.
I don't remember. It's like I can't. I mean, I can remember her, but I can't see her. I can't ever see her doing anything.
But you have photos or?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of photos.
You just can't remember the memory of her doing something.
Yeah. The only thing I remember is that the last time I saw her, we had a huge argument.
Oh, man. Do you regret that or?
Yeah. Wouldn't you?
What would you say to her if you had another moment to?
I wouldn't have said anything. She forgave me.
Oh, she did. Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I know that.
That's cool.
I know she would have. Yeah, that's who she was.
Of course, all parents probably do, right? They do it whenever we're crazy kids, right?
Yeah.
Wow. What was the biggest lesson you learned from your dad?
I think it's how to act. Because he was an alcoholic, and he used to be like Jack Lemmon in Days of Wine and Roses and disappear for days upon time. And between Fort Worth and Dallas, when I was growing up, along the Trinity River, which runs this far, Arlington was there. There was nothing there. It was like wilderness between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Sure.
Except for all this line of redneck bars. And that's where my dad would be. And so my mother would go looking for him. And when I got to be 12 or 13, well, in the fifth grade, I weighed 185 pounds. In the seventh grade, I weighed 240, which is, I weigh less today than I did in the seventh grade.
Wow.
And there's not too many people can say that.
Sure.
This morning, I weighed 5 pounds less than I did in the seventh grade. So
that's a big seventh grader.
Oh, man. I scored 77 points. They had a play, a button hook play, where I became the offensive end. They backed off the end. I went at about five-step button hook. I had great hands.
Sure.
And they threw me the ball, and I would just run. And these little kids would jump on me, try to tackle me.
Wow.
Even if they tried to tackle me low, I wouldn't fall down.
Amazing.
And I scored 77 points. And it was an elementary record in Dallas. I don't know if it still is.
Congrats. Congrats just about that.
That was years ago. Yeah, I mean, you know, that was 50 years ago. So somebody's probably passed it by now.
Amazing.
But so when I became 12 and 13, I would tell my mother to wait in the car. I would go in. And I would walk into these bars. And I knew every one of them had a gun. Every guy in there had a gun. Because that was Texas.
Right? Yeah, of course.
Oh, in the high school parking lot. And there were guys with pickup trucks with shotguns in racks in the back window.
Right.
So guns were everywhere. They are now. I mean, I live in Austin. Mm-hmm. They just
love Austin.
They just got a permit, though, to carry on campus at the University of Texas.
No way.
Yep. And it's because of all the, like, Virginia Tech and that kind of thing. And they might run into a few problems, but it's to deter people like the guy at Virginia Tech from coming into the University of Texas doing that, because he's going, wait a second.
Everyone's got a gun.
These guys are carrying. I'm not going to do that. And you can carry in your car.
Crazy.
And because everybody else does, I have one in my car.
Sure.
I have a little 5-shot .38.
Right.
Because I'm not going to let some guy pull a gun on me.
Sure.
He's going to pull a gun on me. I'm going to pull a gun on them. You want to play? Let's play, son. You don't know who the hell you're dealing with here.
Yeah.
I'm a mean mother. I'll get into the acting thing.
Right. You scare someone quick.
So when I would go in there in those bars, it would all get quiet. And they would look at me, and I look back at them like, you lay a finger on me, you're dead. Hmm. And so I think that's where I learned how to act.
Amazing.
And so that's why I like bad guys in movies so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Range Rover Sport leads by example. Picture this. Assertive on-road performance meets commanding all-terrain capability. That's the third generation Range Rover Sport, which is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet. This vehicle redefines sporting luxury, offering an instinctive drive with engaging on-road dynamics and effortless composure. Now available in sleek, new Stealth Pack, Carpathian gray exterior wrapped in satin protective film with black accents and black brake calipers. Inside the Range Rover Sport, advanced cabin technology like active noise cancellation and cabin air purification offer new levels of comfort and refinement. And let's not forget about the award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment system. Enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Wow, that's like a spa day while on the go. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's been the favorite, your favorite character so far in a movie?
Well, it's a movie written by Arthur Miller, and he was actually on the set and freaked me out. Mm. And it was with Bill Mason and Laura Dern. It's called Focus. And
when did this come out?
Oh, God, I don't know. 2000,
okay,
maybe.
Okay.
It was at the Toronto Film Festival.
Gotcha.
And Arthur Miller, I'm sitting at Video Village, is where they have, for people who don't know, where the director would sit with his little TV monitors, mm-hmm, and watch what the camera sees.
Right.
And there's lines on it to show him what the actual film will turn out to be. Mm-hmm. So he can judge if he likes the scene, not from watching it live, from watching it on the TV monitor. So they call it Video Village. So it's probably 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting in my little chair in Video Village. And a guy comes to sit next to me, and I didn't pay any attention. And eventually I looked over and I went, oh, my God, it's Arthur Miller. So I pick my chair up and I move it down the block and hide behind a tree. And the first AD goes, what happened to Meatloaf? I know he was here. And I go, I'm here. And so I've got a scene that really is shooting for 2 days with Bill Macy. Mm-hmm. And I go to Bill and I go, do you know Arthur Miller's on the set? And he goes, yeah. And I go, I'm freaked. And Bill goes, me. And see, I didn't do very well handling that one. But he goes, calm down. We know what we're doing. You know what you're doing. You've already shot a lot of this character. You got it. Don't worry about it. I went, okay. So I immediately calmed down. And we shot it. And at lunch, Bill and I always sat together at lunch. And Arthur Miller passed by me, put his hand on my shoulder, leaned over and said, I really like what you're doing with my character. I almost fell into the spaghetti. When he said, I really like what you're doing with my character. Because I know he didn't have that in mind for his character when he wrote him.
Yeah. Wow.
I know that. But I would have never asked him what he had in mind.
Sure, sure.
Because I want him to be what I want him to be, not what Arthur Miller had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to get close. Arthur Miller characters are very complicated, especially one like I was playing, who appears not stupid, but not really very smart, not real smart.
Yeah.
But all of Arthur Miller's characters are really very intelligent. They just don't know they are. So you have to play both sides.
Mm.
You have to play the guy who's not very smart, yet he's still intelligent,
yeah.
Very intelligent. So you have to combine that. It's really complicated.
I can imagine.
It's very complicated to work those two together.
That's why you're one of the best.
Well, I don't know about that.
You do a great job.
I'm pretty good at what I do.
You do a great job, yeah.
Brando is my Brando, Hackman, Orson Welles, Jimmy Stewart, Hal Holbrook, Jack Lemmon, a few modern day, the Irish guy. Oh man, Colin Farrell, Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
They're really. I'm going to include Brad Pitt because Brad Pitt is one of the most underrated actors out there.
Yeah,
well, you got to remember.
With him.
Yeah, you got to remember how long it took for Robert Redford or Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
They had to get older to receive the recognition they should have gotten when they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So Brad Pitt hadn't gotten his recognition, but he will.
Yeah.
He will.
Yeah.
I mean, as a really good actor.
What was that like working with him?
Oh, Brad Pitt is as down to earth as any human being. Mm. You just trust me. You wouldn't want to be Brad Pitt.
Why?
Oh, it's a job walking down on the street.
It's a full-time job, yeah.
Yeah, it's a full-time gig. I mean, it's hard enough for me to go to the grocery store. I can't even imagine Brad Pitt trying to go to the grocery store.
Right.
I mean, I go to the grocery store, everybody wants to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk to them. So I try to avoid the grocery store as much as I can. If I'm got my mind set, okay, I'm ready to go to the grocery store. I know there's a possibility. Some days I go in and nobody talks to me. Other days I go in and everybody wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
So you have to have your mind set when you go out. I'm going out. People may want to talk to me. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yeah. What is it about him that continues to make him evolve? Like, why do you think he's able to evolve from just the model guy back in the day who's actually become a great actor and still...
Well, I think it's discipline, and I think it's that he studies his craft.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to believe me, Jack Lemmon still studies his craft. Eastwood definitely studies. I really dislike actors who were very good when they were young, but they've stopped trying to learn. I won't name them because I'm not going to go that far. But I know who they are, and they know who they are.
Sure.
One of them has come out of it, and I was really glad to see it. But really extraordinary when they were young.
Yeah, yeah.
Brando was always extraordinary.
Sure, sure. A few questions left for you. I want to respect your time.
Okay.
What are you most grateful for in your life recently?
Oh, this record.
Yeah.
Bar none.
Why is this so meaningful for you?
Because I think this is the best record I've ever done. Hmm. And Jim Steinman, if you go on Meatloaf Facebook, and it kept moving, and I kept pinning it to the top. So finally, they realized that I wanted it pinned at the top.
Right.
So it's permanently pinned.
Mm.
He calls it one of the 10 best records ever made.
Wow.
Now, I'm not going to go that far, but he can say that.
Sure.
But I really think it's the best record I've ever made, because some people were expecting, like I said, Bad or Bad 2. Mm-hmm. They go, oh, well, this is terrible. And like I said, my doctor's prescription, let's do it 4 times.
In 1 day. Yeah.
Well, you can do 2 days. That's okay.
Okay.
But some people get it on the first listen.
Yeah, sure.
But they're expecting Meatloaf to, you know, mm-hmm. come in like a freight train.
Right, right.
And I don't. I'm going all the way. It's just start. I'm in my low voice. But it's the same voice as Bad Outta Hell.
Sure, sure.
Just the timbre's different because I'm 40 years older.
Yeah, yeah.
Exact same voice. Mm. If we had Bad Outta Hell, if I could compare them and show you, you'd hear it.
Right.
It's just as plain as you know a fried egg when you see one.
Sure, sure. I love it. Something to be grateful for. What is something you've accomplished so much? You've got one of the biggest albums of all time.
I pay no attention
sure.
to anything in the past. Mm. Nothing. Not even the 4-star review from Q Magazine.
Sure, sure.
That's gone. What's happening now is I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And you're talking to Meatloaf. Yeah. This is Meatloaf in character, but the object of acting and being in character is always about the truth of the moment. And I don't feel a song. I become the song. Hmm. I know 2 or 3 people like that. I know actors like that. But musicians, I can name 3. I can name 4, Joplin being 1. But the others are guitar players. Brian May doesn't play guitar. He is the guitar. Mm. Scott Ian from Anthrax doesn't play the guitar. He is the guitar. But the number one is Jeff Beck. And Jeff Beck, Clapton's not far behind him. But Jeff Beck, you ever see Jeff Beck go? I saw him at the Les Paul. Mm. At Les Paul's club, sitting this close to him. It was like he was the guitar.
Amazing.
He didn't play it. He was it. And so that's when I do a record. And people have said, oh, you can't possibly feel the music unless you've written it. And I always go, yeah, tell that to Marlon Brando about Streetcar Named Desire or On the Waterfront. Hmm. Or go tell that to, you know, Hoffman when he did Death of a Salesman. Or, you know, The Crucible, any actor that's ever done The Crucible. Hmm. Any of the great writers, Tennessee Williams, Shakespeare,
right, right.
Arthur Miller. I mean, going down the line, I can't. There's so many great writers that have written so many great plays. But when I finish a song, it doesn't feel like Jim Steinman wrote it.
Right.
It feels like I wrote it.
Because you become it.
I am the song. Mm-hmm. I become that person. I become that song. And that's the thing that I disagree with on television. When they give them the advice, you've got to feel the song. If I was ever a mentor on one of those shows, I would tell the contestant, he's right, you must feel the song. But the first thing is, you have to become the song. You have to take it internally and become that moment of the song. And you don't control the stage. You control the room. You own it. You own every space. It's like my advice to an actor and young actor who's going to auditions. It is your time. It is your moment. It is your room. And don't let anybody control you.
I love it. Got me the chills.
Yeah, you don't.
You could coach me all day.
You don't. You don't. You sure. Don't let that, you know, casting agent, you don't even let the director control you on your first reading. If after the first reading, the director says, are you able to do it this way? You go, of course, just give me a second. And I will always like then rethink it and reanalyze it and be able to turn around and give him exactly what he wants.
Wow.
I mean, I've always said, if you want me to be an Irish milkmaid, I can be one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Let's see. No, I'm just kidding.
It'd take me a little while to get there.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I'd have to get the Irish accent down.
Right, right.
And we need a cow. Well, we don't really need a cow. We just pretend there's a cow.
Exactly. This is a question I ask all my guests at the end. It's called the three truths question. So
everything is the truth. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Well, this is a question about if you had, say it's many years from now and it's the last day for you on Earth, and all your movies, your albums, your work that you put out there is, for whatever reason, it's been erased. So people don't have the content you put out there. Or you have a piece of paper and a pen to write down three things you know to be true about your entire experience in life, all the acting, the music, the relationships, the touring, everything you've ever learned.
Oh, it would be about none of that.
Okay. What would be your three truths, the thing that you would share to the world that would be kind of the lessons that you would give back?
About my wife, my grandson, and my daughters.
Okay.
Yeah. About my wife, Deborah, my grandson, Rebel, who by then could be one of the most famous musicians on the face of the earth.
Wow.
He's like a child prodigy. It flabbergasted me. And about my daughters, Pearl and Amanda, and how talented they are and how they should continue to follow their paths and their truths and their dreams.
Sure.
And there is a line. People always go, why do you think the Rocky Horror Show has lived so long? I said, there's a line in the Rocky Horror Show that people may not know consciously, but subconsciously they hear it. And the line is, don't dream it, be it.
That's a good truth right there. I like that. Well, before I ask the final question, Meet, I want to acknowledge you for a moment for your incredible humility, your incredible talent, your incredible drive, your work ethic, and your ability to inspire and lift so many people up on all the work that you do. It's so inspiring.
I think the whole world should do this. People forget about manners. I introduce myself to everybody. I don't care if they know who I am or not. Hi, I'm Meat. What's your name? You know, I will always say thank you. Even to Frances, who's been working with me for 8 years. She does something for me, I say thank you. Whatever it is, I say thank you. Because it means a lot to me. Say thank you. You're welcome. Be kind. I get on a plane. I ask the flight attendants, how's your day? Well, it's been pretty good. Well, I hope it gets better. And I hope that everybody treats you with the respect you deserve. And they go, whoa. And I do that everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Because I think that's important, that all people deserve the respect and the gratitude for being who they are.
Absolutely.
And what they do.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I will always try to help because I was homeless in my life. So I know what that's like.
Sure.
I've had a lot of experiences in my life, so I can relate to almost everyone. My band, when I was on Motown, was all African-American. And we went through the South, and they literally, the racism I saw, they were the ones holding me back. I was ready to attack, and they were going, "Me, it's okay. We go through this all the time." I go, "I don't really care. This guy's not going to treat you that way.
Wow. Me,
come on. Come on, let's go. Let's go." I mean, I even went into the kitchen in the Holiday Inn and got water and bread and butter, and everybody brought it to the table, got everybody's order, took it into the kitchen myself, handed it to the chef. And I said, "You want me to come back and get it?" "No, we'll bring it."
Wow.
And I mean, my mother taught me that. My grandfather was that way. My mother taught me that.
Yeah.
And I would get so angry when I was in high school at that, because I grew up in Texas. So, you know, there's a bit of racism. It's gotten better. And in fact, one night we were going home and we were right by Love Field and we were in Lover's Lane. And a group of African Americans came and started hitting my car with baseball bats and the windshield and I got out of the car. And my friend's going, "Don't get out of the car." I said, "Yeah, I'm getting out of the car." And I was very calm. And they all of a sudden just stopped. And I said, "I understand why you're doing this, but you need to learn respect because I have respect for you, even though you just done what you did to my car. My car is nothing but a piece of metal.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything compared to you. You are worth so much more than this piece of metal."
Wow.
And they just kind of looked at me and walked away. My friend thought they were going to just kill me. And I said, "No."
Wow.
And it was like one of those moments. I got out perfectly calm and just didn't yell at them, talked to them in this kind of voice. And they all kind of stopped and I talked to them. And that's what I said. And I think I was like possessed by my grandfather. Because that's the kind of words my grandfather would have used.
Sure, sure. Amazing. Well, I appreciate the example you've been setting for many years for how to treat people and how to be grateful.
Well, I mean, I think the world is upside down at the moment, and we really need more love in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we need more respect for each other.
Absolutely.
For everyone.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, I want to ask one final question.
Okay.
Make sure everyone go pick up Braver Than We Are. Meatloaf, the legend who doesn't like to be called a legend.
Yeah, I don't like to be called a legend.
Get this. It's on iTunes.
But
it is.
You got to listen to it to understand.
Four times, people.
Don't disregard it on your first listen.
There you go. Because
it's better than you think it is.
I like it. Final question. What's your definition of greatness?
People that respect other people.
There you go. Neat. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed connecting with Meatloaf, also known as Meat. Make sure to share it out with your friends, lewishouse.com/386. Check out the full show notes. Pick up his new album, Braver Than We Are, and send some love to him over on social media. This was a lot of fun, and it's because of you guys that allows me to connect with inspiring, influential leaders and rock stars like Meatloaf because of the movement of greatness that we're creating together. You guys continue to listen. You continue to share. And that allows us to bring on incredible guests because of the platform that we're building together. So thank you Thank you. Thank you for listening every single week, for sharing, for letting me know how to make this better and who to bring on. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. If you haven't left a review yet on iTunes, make sure to do that over at itunes.com/School of Greatness. If this is your first time here, please subscribe to the podcast because we do this every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We bring you a shot of inspiration, motivation, and greatness every single time you turn on this podcast. So I love you guys very much. I appreciate you. Big thank you to Meatloaf for coming on. Such a pleasure and an incredible experience. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.